quite a while just to learn where all the damn levers are before he can become really effective in the administration's government. So I'm quite sure there were some of them who felt like that with him in as governor, it would give the people in the legislature a much stronger hand in the overall operation of government. I think that there was, had to be people that were thinking along those lines, as well as other lines that other people probably were thinking on too, and that is that Maddox was not going to be able to just step in and try to undo and try to slow down the momentum that had been built up in the state over 3 years, industrial, education, and every other way.
Was there an effort by some group, though, to actually talk to Callaway and finally just sort of gave up?
I don't know about that. I never talked to Callaway along any lines like that. Now, I don't know whether there was some effort. There was an effort by some of the legislators to talk to him, but I'm sure there had to be an effort by a lot of them to talk to him, you know, because it was a wild three-ring circus, and there were all sorts of intrigue, and all kinds of intrigue, and all sorts of so-called people, you know, going around saying, do this, do that, do the other. But I couldn't tell you off the top of my head. I can't remember specifically if I did do that, and I didn't do that.
Now, we've also been told, Mrs. Buck, and Republicans, that you played a key role in getting the legislature to...
Well, I think that's probably right. Yeah. I think, as far as I was concerned, I made it clear I was a Democrat, and I wasn't going over the Republican Party.
In retrospect, was your role primarily one of converting people who were disinclined to go with Maddox, or was it merely one of giving positive reinforcement to people who were somewhat inclined to do that anyway?
My role was just giving people positive reinclinement to the fact that I was a Democrat and I wasn't going to the Republican Party, and I think you may realize that I wasn't about to flip over to the glamour of the Republican Party. See, we'd had four or five of these guys, if you remember that year, too, who'd made a little flip-flop in the middle of the race, like Benton and the rest of them.
Okay, that occurred in the middle of that campaign.
That's right.
Okay,
they walked right out in the middle of the campaign, which I thought was the most lowest form of ingratitude. You know, it's all right when you get to the end of your term, I think, you want to change party, but when you've been elected by a party to serve for a term, and then in the middle of a stream, you start trying to change horses, and I just don't think that's the
way. Well, that switchover occurred, though...
The fall of 66. That's when they were pulled that election.
Okay. During the time they were running as Democrats?
Oh, yeah. It was sometime during the time they were running.
They were unopposed by Republicans at that time?
Those boys were, yeah. Most of them were going out at the end of the year or something like that.
So they had all been inaugurated?
Well, they had been serving. They still had some time to serve, that's right, on their term.
They weren't elected the same.
They were not being elected the same, yeah, that's right.
I see, so all constitutional officers don't have...
Right, they don't run the same way.
Okay. That is sort of tough. Clarify that. Did want to ask you one more thing, and that is, you know, from your own perspective, how do you assess, you know, the 1970 campaign? What do you think caused your defeat?
Well, I know what caused my defeat. Two things caused my defeat. First thing caused my defeat was that I knew so much about the government in 1970, having served and having been in that office, knew how it worked and what needed to be done, that I embarked upon as a part of my campaign. I embarked upon the theory that I could educate the people on what the needs really were. I gave them a pretty good dissertation on what government was all about and what we needed. Well, I found out, and I think I told you all, that hell, they weren't interested in that. They were interested in emotional issues at the time. Second thing was that Jimmy Carter, very deliberately and very assiduously, I might add, over a period of 3 or 4 years, went around the state and totally misrepresented himself and his political philosophy as a conservative, a George Wallace type conservative. Of course, conservatism in 1970 in this state was growing rampant. He he bottled up what I would call, for lack of better description, an attractive bottle of political snake oil, and he sold that snake oil far and wide. He also, as a part of his what you might call deceitful type of campaign, he sold also the theory that here I was a big corporate lawyer, and here he was a little peanut farmer, and that since I had left office, and I had been very successful, and the reason I had been successful was because while I was governor of Georgia, that you know, I had done a lot of favors for a lot of people, and now they were my friends, my clients, all that kind of horse. And he just went around and gave that song and dance far and wide, from north to south, east to west. Of course, the reason he's had such a disastrous time, his 4 years, is that the day he made his inaugural speech, he completely changed the colors that he had been flying under in the campaign. And I'd say, if you check it out, which I'm sure you will, that he probably had the most 4 years of the most discredited, personally discredited type of administration that's ever been in Georgia, for simply the reason that nobody in the state, with exception of a small, hardcore, loyal people who always have around the governor's office, nobody in this state, I think, would tell you that he really carried out what he campaigned on. He did just the opposite. Totally distrusted by there may be some very liberal people that have been pleasantly surprised. Well, they, based on his campaign, they would have been inclined to think totally otherwise. But the moderates and the conservative people in the state don't believe
it. How do you assess currently the impact of organized labor politically
in this state?
Right.
I think they still are not organized politically to the extent that the leadership can speak for the rank and file members.
Have they reached the point that a candidate would consider it an asset to have their endorsement, or do you still consider it a liability?
Well, I don't know. I think they've improved that situation. I think most candidates would like to have their endorsement. I don't think candidates feel like their endorsement is a kiss of death.
But am I correct that 10, 15 years ago, it wasn't that way.
Years ago, every candidate didn't want their endorsement.
Right.
They thought it was a real kiss of death. I mean, today, most of them do like that.
Is anything else you want to talk about?
I've given it to you in a nutshell. Just to say, as I told you all the other day, I think, because I've had subsequent opportunities, I think I could have gone back if I wanted to. Russell died in the same way, probably had a successful venture if I wanted to do it. I did not do it. I realize today that, like you talked about, the position you've got to be in that public office, and in particular, if you go to Washington, you've got to sit down and vegetate. But as I look back on my administration in retrospect in those years, I feel better about it every day. As I look at what I have seen happen the last 4 years, and Maddox left in place most of the people that I had put into the cabinet-type position for the government at this point, because he didn't know anybody of any real stature to put in there. So for his 4 years, those programs continued. Since that time, Carter tried his head. The one thing that he has tried to do is, quote-unquote, reorganize the government. He's been around here for a period of time. All kinds of problems, and he spent most of his time the last 2 years trying to groom himself for some kind of job in Washington, which I don't think everybody. As a result, the legislature has taken over the government. One thing that I think he's done that I really regret is that he turned over to the General Assembly after Maddox didn't really exert the strong leadership that he needed to. But Carter is, in effect, he's abdicated his executive responsibility to the General Assembly.
Now, Mike, you consider then the office of chief executive, of office of governor in Georgia, institutionally, to be weaker now than it was under your government?
Much weaker.
What are the reasons for that? I mean,
I just gave it to
okay.
You. Maddox didn't know how to keep it from to keep the power in the hands of the governor. Yep. So he didn't have any experience.
Am I correct? That was when the legislature, for the first time, in effect, elected their own speaker rather than
that's
the governor.
Right.
In effect,
that's
designating
right.
who they were to pick.
That's right.
Has that been the major change?
Oh no, it's been all sorts of changes. The budget, the executive budget, has now been shot down. They don't listen to that, don't look at it with any degree of credibility.
How's the budget put together?
Well, the government still puts it together, but they take his budget over there now and just put it in the trash can. They want to do what they want. There's a lot of things that and there is no real allegiance to the governor's office anymore. Used to be a great rapport between the governor and last 2 or 3 years, thought it could get 50 votes in the committee and the House or the Senate. He puts his bills in, he don't know whether he's ever going to get out of the committee. Which, of course, is, I think, a tragedy, because the governor has to have he runs on a program, and he has to depend upon his relationship with the General Assembly for his program.
Has the office of lieutenant governor changed at all during that period? Has he taken...
Well, of course, it's changed dramatically in the last 4 years, because Maddox and Carter have had this running gun battle with the constant fight.
But has the lieutenant governor always been more or less independent before
appointing committees? My lieutenant governor was not one of my... I was going to run it. He was that year. I'd find it sitting down, kind of work with him and work together. We don't brush and fight. We can take credit as well as I can. He was worthwhile. But if you want to fight, you'll fight everything. You're not able to convince him that it's in the best interest of the state to work together. That hasn't been the case.
How about any other instances?
Well, I don't know. There's been a lot of
someone who I consider to be very much an impartial observer, his comment, Carter, was a man who campaigned in politics very hard for 3 years to become governor, and as soon as he became governor, he quit politicking, and it has hurt him. Quit politicking insofar as the relations with the legislature, I think.
Not only quit politics, but he also quit, he never administered. Drew the plan, the theory, but you got people what he was going to do to all those sorry politicians in there. If they didn't toe the line, if they didn't do what they were supposed to do, he'd try to do it.
The machine was government. I ran and the legislature, in effect, took over the rest of state
politics. To some extent, with Maddox, though, looking down their throats, you know, with I'm going to blast you out of the water, and he scared the hell out of them. So they ran it just in a nice, calm, moderate way. And Carter came in, and Carter's theory was, as he just said, his theory was that I got a program, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time trying to convince you all how right it is. If you don't put my program in, I'm going to go out and tell the people on you, and they're going to get mad with you. They said, the hell with you, we tell the people two, we represent two, we've elected two. So on that theory, he spent 4 years going around saying, like, I'm going to tell on you if you go to the people and tell them. And that's because it just got worse.
was the current Georgia law on primary elections passed? Was that
the current one? What do you mean by that?
Well, the one that provides for a state to run both primaries for 25% of the filing fee to be returned to the party for the first five by petition.
I don't know. We rewrote the election code in the summer of 1964-65. Now, they change the election laws every year, right? There wasn't any. We put in, I think that was in 64-65, we had to put in election, you know, for the Republicans and the Democrats, you know, separate primaries. The petition thing has been on the books for years and years.
Did the Republican Party peak here in 62?
Peak?
Yeah.
I think pretty obvious it's up to now. You've got to consider that their high watermark. I don't think anybody thought they would peak, but as the record shows now, history, if you look back on it, I guess that was their high watermark.
End interview, Carl Sanders, no more transcription, this tape.
Really, the legislative, with their hold in the legislature, is about the same as the world they used to be. I've got to check the figures, but I think it's very close to what it was now. It makes a difference.
Okay, you got all you need?
Thank you very much.
Yes, sir. Good talk to you.
Okay, bye. Goodbye.